Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Woo-hoo! So, hello, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard Nicholas. With me to chat about a film is Anthony Evans.
How do you do?
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
We collectively, and a few other people, are Film Bin. So yeah, you know, it's a film podcast. They exist. This is one of them. We're going to talk about a film, and that film is The Bride. So it was Abby's pick, so she can give some of the details of the film.
The Bride is from 1985. It's directed by Frank Rodham, written by Lloyd Fonville, inspired by the book by Mary Shelley. It stars Sting, Jennifer Beals, Clancy Brown, and David Rappaport.
I don't really know if you could say it stars Sting.
It does star him.
It's more like he's kind of hanging there like a marionette puppet.
It's supposed to star Sting, but he's more of a star that's about to go out.
He's got a black hole.
He's a red dwarf that's about to implode. Or what do stars do?
It's complicated.
But yeah, I mean, he's in it, and he's in it as Frankenstein, which is one of the lead roles, so you can't really deny him. One of his bigger credits. I mean, he's got a few to his name.
I think this is his first kind of leading role.
And there's a good reason he only ever gets cameos.
Yes.
Although, was he not... He was in Quadrophenia, which this was the same director as. Is that right, Abby?
Yeah, he was in Quadrophenia first, I think. And he was... He did a lot better in Quadrophenia. I don't know if he just sort of lost his nerve when he got given more to do or what, but it didn't end well.
Was he a mod or a rocker in that?
He was King of the Mods, I think.
King of the Mods. Okay. Phil Daniels, who's also in this, was in that, so he must have done something right. Yeah. To have the directors were friends. Anyway, Phil Daniels and Alexei Sale is in this as well. Those are the two names that came up in the film that you didn't mention in the credits, but they're smaller roles. I guess that's why you didn't mention them.
Mm.
And, we'll get to them. They're circus folk, and they come up. But yeah, it was your choice, Abby, so do you want to explain yourself?
Well, I watched this originally during Clancy Brown season.
Again, you always say... I was watching a season of someone, like it's a thing that happens on a TV channel or as part of the yearly calendar, but what do you mean, a Clancy Brown season?
I watched a bunch of Clancy Brown films. This was one of them, and I thought it was sufficiently interesting to talk about on this show.
Yes.
I seem to recall we all chanced upon it on TV one time, like the second half, maybe.
That was my fault. Out. Well, no, I noticed that it was on television. I went, oh, this is one of the ones I have to watch. I put it on, watched it for a bit so that I got an idea of what it was like and if I should follow it up, and I decided that I will.
Yeah, we all just sucked. I think we got, I personally anyway, remember getting a bit sucked in by Clancy Brown and his side of the story, because it's very much a film of two halves, two stories even.
Mm.
Yes, one... Slightly superior than the other.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's a significant gap between. I think, you know, the Sting side of the story is poor, but the Clancy Brown and his little friend story are rather good. I think we should talk about it. But Anthony, what were you expecting when Abby suggested this?
Well, I was there the same time that this kind of chance occurrence happened, but I didn't. Pay as much attention as you guys, so I didn't really remember that much, to be honest with you, other than like Sting was in it and it was Frankenstein. But this time I saw the trailer and it had a really good trailer, much better than the film, much better than it deserves to have. And I went over the cast list and it was quite extensive and with quite good people, and I was quite interested this time around, actually. Even though I seem to remember it being a bit dull from the first time. So, a mixed bag, but I was kind of a bit more excited.
Well, I believe at the time you commented that the trailer looks like it's a trailer for the film Sting. because that's how it just ends with his name.
Oh, yes. Sting starring Jennifer Beals and the Bride.
Yeah. But I felt a bit cheated by the trailer because I knew that a big part of the story was Frankenstein's monster going and joining the circus, like with like a dwarf or midget friend he acquires. So there was like that the what's the name of the actor who plays the dwarf or midget? I'm not sure what.
David Rappaport. Oh.
Yeah, he is someone who befriends the monster that has no name, like, of Frankenstein. It's, okay, let's just get into it, because that will help things. But I was a bit miffed that David Rappaport was not even in the trailer. Well, that seemed mad, because it's a lot about him.
Yes. That's true, and it is the biggest kind of deviation, I suppose, from the actual Frankenstein story. So you'd think, like, you'd want to include that to distinguish yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the bride in question is essentially Frankenstein's bride, or supposed to be. That's it's sort of the sequel to Frankenstein, isn't it, really? Because
It's odd, because this film appears, after about the 5-minute or 10-minute mark, to just hijack another film and just start another one, which is really odd.
Yeah, yeah, it sort of goes with a vaguely Pygmalion thing.
All right, go on. Pygmalion, yes, that's the play. Go on.
So, I'm just going to say, kind of, it just the first 5 minutes, it just jumps straight into kind of like the middle of the Frankenstein story.
Mm.
And then after 10 minutes, everything blows up and we have a totally kind of different love story going on.
Yeah.
Sort of.
You say love.
Yes, manipulation.
It's a bit weird because a lot of the time nothing was really happening. It's just these people were just kind of living their lives to no real end.
Yes. And
there's very little plot going on.
The stuff with Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein, I guess. What does she become called?
Eva.
Eva. Actually, she's a connection to a podcast we've done about called Vampire's Kiss, which we all rather enjoyed. The woman who plays Eva is also a vampire in Vampire's Kiss, am I right?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
So you can check that podcast out, and please check out the film, even if you don't come back to the podcast. Vampire's Kiss, tremendous. anyway, like, okay. Abby, you suggested Pygmalion, which is, what was the film version of that I have seen?
My Fair Lady.
Yeah. How do you think it's like My Fair Lady? That seems like an odd comment.
Well, he says that the thing he's trying to do is to create the new woman, one who is equal to a man. And in order to do that, he has to educate her, he has to teach her how to live a society. And at first, that's how their relationship sort of pans out. That he is the teacher and she is the student, and he is teaching her to be different to other women.
Yeah, I see.
Not how it ends, but that's how it starts.
No. I think what's particularly baffling about this whole film is it's called The Bride, when really there are two films in here, and that's one, the cultivating of a woman to be equal to men in an era where that was impossible. And it's all a bit odd, because, you know, it's essentially a mad scientist brings a cadaver to life and then teaches her how to be an intelligent person instead of a silly old woman. But there's also another story of the kind of buddy movie between a giant and a small guy, and about them, like the kind of idiot and the crafty small man. Like there's their journey as well. So in a way, I kind of want to cut the film in two and go, well, that's the bride. The bride side, not so good. This other side with Victor and what's the name of the character? He's the guy.
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo, that's it. So Ronaldo and Victor, the idiot animated corpse giant. Like, I don't know. Like, Clancy Brown is playing essentially a giant idiot, and Ronaldo is a well-travelled dwarf, and he wants to befriend him because they're both kind of outsiders. But because he's the intelligent one, he's kind of teaching Victor. He names him, weirdly. I don't know why. Why did Frankenstein not decide to name his own creation?
He wasn't a fussed on him.
He really wasn't, was he?
He considered him a failed experiment,
yeah.
More or less. Even though he did successfully bring life to a dead thing, it wasn't good enough for him.
I think maybe in the books he gives him the name of Adam, but like mostly in like culture, I don't think it gets a name.
Oh, that's right, because she's called like Eva or Eve or whatever because of the first woman, and yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, in the Frankenstein story, you know, in more the usual version, I think is that Frankenstein before. But, you know, it basically goes wrong for him because he creates a monster, in quotation marks, and, you know, he doesn't... You know, it depends what version you go with. It depends on whether the Frankenstein monster needs a bride or not, I suppose, doesn't it? Like, because this... I think the Frankenstein story doesn't have that in initially. It's just the subsequent...
Oh, no, it does.
It does.
Yeah.
So...
The main... Well, generally how the Frankenstein thing goes is we got, like, Frankenstein, who wants to bring people to life. So he goes about doing that the first time, realizes it's gone wrong and that he shouldn't have done it. But then kind of Frankenstein goes away and then comes back and demands him to make another kind of being like him so he doesn't have to be alone in the world. So then it's weird. It kind of turns out that Frankenstein's wife is killed and then he reanimates her corpse to be the monster's mate, but then she ends up killing herself.
I see. So it is a proper... Because I'd always been of the opinion it was... Like, it basically was fairly straightforward that Frankenstein reanimates a corpse that he's bumbled together with stitching and mad science, brings a giant corpse to life, and villagers don't like him at some point and attack, and it all goes wrong. But I obviously have seen film versions and not read the original text, and I don't know. I think Scooby-Doo ruins a lot of monsters by paraphrasing some classic novels. That's what I'll blame. I'm blaming Scooby-Doo. Anyway, so this is kind of this whole story of Frankenstein, only we see the side mission where Victor meets a little guy and has an adventure that turns a bit sour.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's much, much more the interesting and entertaining part of the film.
Well, that's what I was coming to, is this... story between Victor and Ronaldo is great. I think it's a really good story. Like, it's kind of bittersweet and tragic, but kind of sympathetic, and like, you know, these two outsiders bonding, and it's kind of touching because one of them's basically an idiot and the other one is kind of a, you know, sympathetic but kind of arrogant man who, like, you know, because Ronaldo's a complex character because he's both, he wants to impress Victor, even though Victor's, you know, probably impressed by a bit of chicken. You know, Ronaldo is proud of himself, but he gets bullied by children and, like, has a hard time, and people, you know, people in the film don't seem to like him. But to Victor, he's a good friend and a solid companion. So it's a really interesting dynamic they have. And unfortunately, we have to keep cutting back to horse riding, Sting showing off, a woman very easily learning everything, even though she seems to know nothing from the get-go.
That is a good point. I suppose you could argue that it's his second attempt and that he's kind of perfected it. But she's so different from the original Frankenstein that it's a bit distracting. Like, how come the other Frankenstein isn't as super intelligent as she can be?
I mean, yes, it's his second go. He's honed in a bit, hasn't he? But, I mean, there's a scene where she sort of...
Although I suppose she does get a bit of extra juice at the beginning, so maybe that helps.
Oh, we had the lightning bolt and a bit of a catastrophe when she was created. I mean, I assume most people understand the general myth of Frankenstein, so, you know...
Well, this film kind of assumes that from the beginning.
You know, there's a mad scientist, big tower, lightning is used to bring corpses back to life, so everyone knows the concept of what a Frankenstein monster is. And essentially, the botch happens, and it kills the very small cameo of I Know Someone You Like, Abby Timothy Spall. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, man, just this first scene was... it kind of throws you in, so you're not expecting it, so you kind of get a bit hooked. Plus, it's got some really good, it's just a really good set. Everything moves, and everything's got weight, and it's just so satisfying watching it. And then not just that, but you've got Timothy Spall as an Igor kind of character, you've got Quentin Crisp as some assistant character, then you've got Clancy Brown as Frankenstein. And it's like, wow, this film's going to be amazing. And then the whole thing blows up, and Timothy Spall dies, and Quentin Crisp dies, and it looks like Clancy Brown dies, and all you're left with is Sting. And
and that's the biggest tragedy of all.
It was kind of hard to shout, not to shout at the TV going like, no, don't leave us with Sting. Bring back all the interesting people you just killed.
Yeah, it's quite a weird situation. So, basically, Sting, we'll call him, instead of Dr. Frankenstein. Sting, who is Frankenstein for all purposes of the film. The motivation of Sting is he wants to create a human life from either some body parts he's put together or a pre-existing cadaver, doesn't he?
Yes.
He's done that. Victor, who he doesn't call Victor, because why name a man who you've brought to life? Just call him, oi, you, come here. So personally, he's made Clancy Brown live again. And I think that's a good thing. He's a little bit stupid, because, you know, first attempt at bringing life back together. But bringing life back, or whatever you call it. But he wants to create a partner, does he? Because he's not like it's a complete failure. He's initially hoping to make the first ever monster couple.
Well, yeah, I think, like I said, because it jumps into it at the beginning, it doesn't really go into the motivations. Later on, Sting says that he didn't care much for the bride, Eva, when he was making her. But when she was made, he could see the potential.
Yeah, so he was pleased with the improvements, I guess. And he thinks he doesn't have his original one anymore, because it seems like Clancy Brown has died, even though he's just wandered off into the forest or something.
And so I suppose he was just kind of making another one, but it turned out to be quite good.
Yeah. Well, this is...
By quite good, I mean a little bit pretty.
Given that he had low expectations after the first one, it went quite well.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, in terms of improvements, she's not only seemingly smarter and cleverer, she's also without any physical scars or any sign that she's someone... Like, I think there's some idea that some of her parts, if not all... Like, maybe her hands were replaced, or there's been meddling with the original, subject, I guess. But she doesn't show in any... There's scenes where we get to see her beautifully lit by the fire in a slightly, what's the word? I don't know. It's clearly there so to show off, naked lady's bum. Eva comes down and greets Frankenstein when he's like just sitting moodily in his chair by the fire, and she is beautifully lit by some convenient lighting, and we see her backside, or possibly a model. I think it wasn't the actress, but. We establish that she is not flawed physically, really. And that's kind of odd, considering Clancy Brown is made to look like, his head is a dustbin lid with skin put over the top, and just the weirdest wig thing ever, and is full of scars, you know? He hasn't quite got the bolts in the neck, but he does look complete burr.
He looks bad enough to be believable as a patched-together monster.
Yeah. And she doesn't... They haven't even bothered to put the classic Frankenstein's Bride the Bride of... Anyway.
The Bride of Frankenstein.
You mean the weird hairdo that she has?
She doesn't have that, like, Marge Simpson with her white streak hair that she, you know, has in other films. But she's perfect. She's a perfect woman, and she learns really quickly. And if all of the problems really come from Sting saying he's going to make her into an equal, but actually... doesn't care about that at all, secretly just fancies her a bit, and is jealous of anyone who takes an interest in her, because it's his pet project, and doesn't like her thinking for herself, really.
That was the weird thing about it. His friend, as well, who was... Every time he came round, he was just basically, I'm good with the ladies. Have you been good with your lady yet? No, I haven't been. You're going to be. It seemed to be his only purpose in life.
Yeah, and just generally... And just generally putting women in their place.
Hmm.
Yeah, he had a big jerk.
Oh, don't forget, we live in a sexist society.
He may as well have just
I'm leaving now.
Yeah, that's it. Hello, I'm here to remind you that the times we live in are sexist, and this will be a problem. Yeah, it was like that. It's very odd. But most of the time, it's just Dr. Frankenstein and his friend arguing, posturing, and just this, it's a kind of philosophical debate, when really the interesting thing should be, my goodness, you've brought someone to life. That's incredible. And then some of it is, he teaches her how to communicate and use cutlery, which is the first thing you need to learn. Like, you know, it's odd. And then there's also this getting around the fact that she learned so quickly by saying, well, she retained some stuff from when she was alive. Sort of, oh yeah. Cutting corners, are we? Shouldn't she have the mind of a child and this be incredibly wrong that you're taking like an interest in her in any kind of... I mean, that's the thing. Dr. Frankenstein doesn't actually take an interest in her as a woman, like, until she's kind of educated and... I don't know, she can't really come of age because, you know, she's a fully grown woman, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he does his job too well, and so in which case she starts thinking for herself and being independent and being far more kind of intelligent than he is. I think there's one point where she points out, like, he's quoting the wrong poetry or something.
Yes,
and he's having none of it, is he?
No. So even though, like, his goal is to create, like, a woman, like, in the image of man, that is to say, acts equally to the men did in the day, he clearly doesn't like it when it happens.
Yeah, that's kind of the drive of that side of the story. It's about this, you know, not liking what you've created, but for different reasons. Like, previously, you created too basic a man, and this time you've created too perfect and too intelligent a being, and then you're sort of both jealous and kind of frustrated that it hasn't turned out how you want. But you should be really pleased because you have succeeded, and it's kind of all about that getting out of hand. And then there's times where it's kind of quaint and funny because some of the lessons she learns are a bit baffling and kind of daft, and like there's some great scenes. Like, they have a dinner party to celebrate her. Like, they kind of make up a story that she was found in the woods, or like, she's like his niece or something. What are they pretending she is rather than a cadaver brought to life?
Well, he tells her that she was just kind of found in the forest with amnesia, which, fair enough.
Yeah,
but later on, I think he pretends he's her, like, distant cousin or something.
Yeah, do you recall more details, Abby?
No, I think Anthony's got that right. Sounds familiar.
And the truth is, she was presumably someone who died and was brought there, possibly found in the woods. I can't quite remember. But that's the truth of it is, she was a reanimated corpse, which is quite the truth to be told eventually, isn't it? So before we get to the climax of the bride and Frankenstein story, let's talk a bit about what happens to the other story, with Clancy Brown coming out and basically just wandering out of the forest into the street. And then almost straight away, Ronaldo's like, right, buddy, how's it going? Go in somewhere with you? I bet you're going here. You are, aren't you? You're going where I'm going. Yeah, let's go. Hey, you can carry me. Let's do this. We're friends now. We're friends. Like, he just assumes so much and kind of cons him straight away, doesn't he?
Yeah, and there's that kind of thing at first where, just another person to kind of take advantage of him, really. But they do, after a while, kind of grow a friendship.
Yeah, it's kind of they build on what Ronaldo has created, which is essentially, I guess he sort of spots him, is pleased that he's been rescued from being bullied by children by this rather large man, and sees an opportunity when he realises, I think, that this guy's a bit of a, you know, thick character who is a bit dim and therefore can be taken advantage of. But they seem to genuinely bond.
Yeah, they're clearly kind of like both kindred spirits and yet opposites. if you know what I mean. So there's definitely, you could see why they're kind of like attracted to each other.
Yeah. What's your take on this, Abby?
Yeah, it is their relationship that really holds up the whole thing. Without it, the whole film would just be a massive pile of rubbish.
Plus, it's just the only thing that's different, that's really different from the kind of other Frankenstein stories you've seen. Because, yes, you have, like, Frankenstein trying to woo the bride, but that story, even though it's not Frankenstein, we've seen it before. We know how it's going to end. But the Victor side plot, we haven't seen that before. We don't know how it's going to end. We don't know where it's going to go, and it's just more interesting. Plus, you meet more fun characters through the story arc that they have.
Yeah, there's a lot more happening, isn't there? Because essentially, Ronaldo is a dwarf who has some kind of performance background. He has an act that he thinks is appropriate for the circus. We're not quite sure on, what his main skill set is, but he's a trapeze artist, essentially. And he has this notion he's going to go to, what's the city they're travelling to? Budapest?
Yes.
He's going to go to Budapest, join the circus, and make enough money to achieve his dream, because you've got to have a dream, I think he says. You've got to have a dream. And his dream is to go to the city that floats on water, aka Venice, and have a nice time. And, he's got a goal. He's got a plan. He's going to execute it. And he kind of is chancing upon Victor coming out of the woods. He's taken to his advantage, but they form a bond. And then even, like, part of their story is becoming a circus act together. They kind of, form an act, and it's all born out of circumstance initially, but it's a really good story because it's about a manipulator gaining a friend, and because he's not a horrible manipulator, he's kind of being a bit cheeky and taking advantage of a strong, dim-witted man, and he doesn't really know the guy's backstory, so he sort of assumes a lot on his own, doesn't he, does Ronaldo?
Yeah, I suppose it's supposed to be like their relationship is supposed to be a kind of parallel to the relationship that Sting and Eva are having, because he's kind of, manipulating her in his own way to his own end. But really, he doesn't learn anything from the experience, whereas Ronaldo does learn that he's probably being wrong and that he should be friends with Victor instead.
I think also Ronaldo and Victor need each other because Ronaldo essentially is lacking size and strength, so he needs someone to stop him being taken advantage of. And Victor wouldn't last very long not knowing enough about the world and not understanding enough about stuff to survive. So he, would eventually be thrown in jail, which does happen to him. Mm. But, the intelligence and the strength they both need to share between them to form, a good duo. And it's, they're both of an advantage to each other, whereas Frankenstein and this woman, Eva, they're not the same balance. Frankenstein doesn't need her. And, do you know what I mean? It's not quite the same. I don't see quite a parallel. I think one is a good combination and the other is a completely useless one.
Well, but parallel but opposite, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think was meant to be something there, but it didn't pan out.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's not perfect at all. But
Yeah. But
it is there.
Yeah, they're definitely a dual story as well. Like, it's presented, like, we flip between the two of them. What do you guys make of David Rappaport in this particular role?
Yeah, he's great.
He was really good.
By far, I think, the best person there in the film.
He's got a very unique voice. Both physically, his voice is kind of high-pitched and kind of, he's got a certain odd quality to him. I can't quite put my finger on what I would describe the way he speaks. It's kind of like, he's slightly arrogant, but also kind of, he's tricksy, but also arrogant, and he's got a very interesting quality to his voice.
Hmm.
And he's very earnest as well, despite being a slight con man at times. I think he's because it's a very delivered performance as well. It feels like almost like a play at times rather than a film. You know? But I think that's partly because his character's a performer. So he's kind of, he knows he's the centre of attention as a dwarf. And therefore he affects the way he speaks as if he's addressing a kind of audience that isn't there. Or is there? I mean, there is people watching him, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Plus, it's a kind of, I suppose it would be a kind of defence mechanism as well. Because he doesn't really have any other thing else to defend himself with, should he be, like, attacked. Yeah. So all he kind of has is his wit and, like, his...
cunning.
Yeah, his cunning. So that's kind of why he's a bit bigger than he is, if you know what I mean. Because he kind of has to be.
Yeah.
Mm.
And until now, he's not had a, you know, 6-foot-odd bodyguard with him. So, you know, and it's partly about that, is them establishing their relationship of the clever one and the bodyguard. And the problems that, you know, they come across all kinds of problems from, you know, what happens when Victor gets drunk and falls down, basically knocks himself out and leaves Ronaldo to have to deal with the villagers who are annoyed at him. Like,
I'd just like to give Clancy Brown the Peter Griffin Award for going through a table in that scene.
Yeah, he does probably take it out, doesn't he? I mean, it's kind of a really broad comedy scene as well, because it's like, basically they end up early on in their relationship, they essentially rob people. They rob a church by Clancy Brown carrying a sack into the church, and then while he talk, like, is distracting the priest, like, Ronaldo cuts his way out of the bag and steals from the poor box to fund their boozing. Which ends them up, you know, getting in a situation where essentially just Clancy Brown is chugging massive quantities of booze and passes out and leaves Ronaldo looking a fool. And I think they get thrown off a bridge rather harshly as well, don't they?
They do, and it's a really big bridge.
So they're dead. They're both dead. Victor, once again, dead. And the movie, it carries on. They have more anecdotes. Before, I was actually going to talk about Clancy Brown a little bit, but before that, did anyone notice how many animals are in this film? I think the director went a bit nuts for, like, just having horses, geese, pigs, cows. This is filled with animals, little cats and stuff.
Anyone? I think they're just trying to get a sense of the time, though, because they are meant to be in a period of time where that was a lot more common.
It's very ambitious, though, and there's some really good directing. The director does really have a good eye for a good shot and knows how to set up interesting things, and there's a lot of effort put in to make it, you know, look
definitely.
Like it's the time period.
I mean, they get the settings right, they get the costumes right, even the music is kind of suitable for the period, I suppose. It's just, there's one weak link. We know what it is. And it had nothing to do with the director, I suppose.
I think they had a... quite, like, that part of the story with the bride and Dr. Frankenstein is what the weaker part of the... It's like you need to work on the story of that.
True, but I think if the two main characters had some chemistry, it might have been a bit interesting. But as it is, there was zero.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you could do as a director when it turns out, like, your two main actors have zero chemistry.
Seeing as you're talking about actors and what they bring to it, let's talk about Clancy Brown. Generally speaking, I think he's a great actor. And it's a difficult role. It's a kind of that Forrest Gump thing where you have to be naive and stupid, but also be likeable and earnest. And Clancy Brown does do a good job, I think, of this kind of Victor character, the monster. He's both kind of angry. He's a bit like the Hulk, isn't he? He's basic, he's angry, he's large, and he's, you know, but he's misunderstood a lot of the time. Before I ask your opinions, he is a bit... he's just beautiful. I will talk slowly, like this, and that means I'm thick. You know, like, that's pretty basic.
It did... It made sense, you know, it's Frankenstein's monster, you know what I mean?
It's a step above going, isn't it?
Yeah. But it did get a little grating towards the end. Plus, there's a little bit of inconsistency with his kind of speech sometimes.
You're an example?
It does kind of jump back and forth. Like, sometimes, like, early on, he says something a little more intelligent, I forget what it is.
Like he's sometimes kind of, a little better at communicating, and other times he's just like, oh, pretty, and you know, and it's like, oh, okay, but you can reason later on a little bit.
But like you say, it is. This is a very challenging role.
To play sympathetically, which is what they're going for. Abby, you're a massive Clancy Brown fan.
Yeah, you probably have a better opinion than we do on this.
I think that has more to do with something that the director himself said when we listened to the commentary for this. He got caught up a lot in what it should look like in the sets and the cinematography, and he didn't pay as much attention as he probably should to the actual acting and the actors. And he admits this himself. He's, you know, he wishes he could do it again.
In the film commentary, he was a bit kind of apologetic that the film, he'd been trying to make a good film, he admitted it had its shortcomings, and one of them could have been they kind of stunt-casted Sting as a star of the future, whereas it didn't have enough charisma to do the job. Sorry, Abby, you were saying, though.
And that's the thing, like, the qualms that you talked about with Clancy Brown there, that I get, that is something that a director should have had a handle on. And he should have gone, well, here you did this and here you did this and that doesn't make sense. So it is unfortunate that the director just wasn't on the ball.
But then Clancy Brown is still great in it. He's still, the fact that it's a man going, oh, I'm stupid, you know, I think it's just maybe a personal bias. He's so good in so many roles, even though he gets, you know, side roles in lots of stuff. He just has a compelling X factor that's, I think, making him likeable, that, you know, means that he can do the really cliche job of an idiot and yet come across as charming. I think his face is doing a lot of the work there. It's not so much the way he says words, he says words like an idiot on purpose because he is one as a character, but the subtleties of like portraying what Victor is thinking and going through, that's where Sting cannot, like Sting, when he says the words, but he doesn't live the words. And Clancy Brown, I think, knows how to act. And you can see it on his face, even if he's got a minimal, you know, Hulk-like vocabulary.
And he struggled with prosthetics as well.
Yeah, they're pretty, I mean, you must feel a bit of a fool as well. I can't say he looked, and he's not meant to look great, but he really looks odd. It's the hair, particularly. But, this is the thing. Ronaldo and Victor are going on this compelling journey where they bond through being mutually beneficial. And because Victor doesn't have anything to do, he's essentially wandering aimlessly, he kind of has no problem being told what to do. And when Ronaldo instructs him to, you know, mallet in tent pegs so that, essentially, Ronaldo can get, because that's the thing, is it? They get to the circus, they're not like, and then that's where Alexei Sayle comes in. Alexei Sayle is this great villainous circus manager, or is he? I'm not sure if he's the. Is he the like? Is he just the manager, or is he also the what's the
ringmaster?
Top, ringmaster, yeah. I'm not sure.
We don't really see anyone else in their roles, I suppose. So he could have been, and it makes sense if he was, because he was clearly running the show at least.
Yeah, but he's a
this weird East End
grimy geezer.
Not just that, the whole thing is like a East End grimy circus, which is unexpectedly in Budapest.
Yeah, but I think it's good though. I really liked him in that role because you kind of dislike him.
You kind of dislike him. My God,
no, but brilliant. You know, Ronaldo is being a bit bold considering, you know. I kind of believe Alexei Sayle's character when he says, oh, you know, dwarfs, who cares? This dwarf's dime a dozen, you know, we don't need that. But essentially, Ronaldo has to convince the circus manager that he has got a good act, and it's essentially a trapeze act where he kind of, his gimmick is he pretends to fall on the audience and he's actually on a piece of elastic, and he thrills them by swinging over them. And I think the main bargaining chip he has is that Victor is really strong and can bash in tent pegs really well and is easily instructed. And that's something Alexei Sayle's character is more interested in. And also, Alexei Sayle is accompanied by Phil Daniels with a kind of horrible mullet gone supernova.
Yes, and he's constantly, like, shirt open, bare-chested as well.
Just to be extra grimy.
I, before we get too far away from Alexis Hale, I like that some of the technique there was to make you not like Alexis Hale, make him take off his shirt.
Just generally, have Alexis Hale be like in horrible, slightly dirty circus clothes and be just be a villain. He's quite good at it. As a comedian, he was quite an antagonistic stand-up comedian who often got into trouble with his audiences, so it must be a natural thing to antagonise in his repertoire.
I think they do slightly oversell the villainous of the circus people, though.
Yeah, because there's Phil Daniels and Alexis Hale are the main bad guys that we focus on. But generally, the circus is filled with... I mean, there's more monkeys. I think we get, like, more freaks. Like, there's more elephants and monkeys, because to add to the number of animals. There's snake charmers. The usual circus lot are there. There's a particularly large woman who seems to be an attraction of herself.
My God, I forgot about her. we have to give the large-breasted woman a mention, because I don't know what to say. You're so big.
Yeah.
They were so big. They were bigger than me. Were they real? I don't know.
I suspect so.
Wow.
Yeah. Props and to that lady.
Astonishment aside, that they have this, like, quite a, you know, again, visually, the whole scene where they come from, like, there's a toffee apple running away Punch and Judy incident that happens to further the relationship of Ronaldo and Victor. Generally speaking, Victor wanders off to a puppet show and Ronaldo is bished and bashed by people as he's buying toffee apples.
Yeah. Although that's a really odd moment, because you think something sinister's going to happen, but it's not, as he's just watching a Punch and Judy show. The way they build it up, it makes it look like he's going to go
die
and...
or get kidnapped or something.
Yeah, but no, he's just watching a Punch and Judy.
I think it's to show us that Ronaldo, without Victor, is quite the victim of life. Mm. Like, he's not got the easiest time, and Victor really is a salvation, like, to Ronaldo. Because Ronaldo seems like he's in charge, wherein really, without Victor, he's probably have a tougher time. And he wouldn't have gone into the circus with all these villains. And, like, a lot of the side characters, like, all of these people who work in the circus are a little bit mean anyway. And then on top of that, you got the two focus villains. So maybe there's too much meanness in the circus. There perhaps should be a few nice people there.
Yeah, I just feel like, I get it. They needed villains, and they don't have that much else to do story-wise. But it's just, like, Ronaldo and Victor turn up, they're very useful, yet they're still angry at them. Then they have a good show to put on, and yet they're still angry at them.
They're making lots of money.
And yet you're still angry at them. I that just got to me after a while. Just, I think there needs a tiny bit more lightness, or just less really evil.
They did establish that Alexis Hale's character did have some kind of long history of dwarves that lied to him. So
I suppose
there's some baggage there. Really.
I also think he sees in Ronaldo another con man of sorts. So he can size him up as being potentially trouble, but at the same time, Ronaldo's kind of outmaneuvered him. He sort of outthought him a little bit and has conned his way into working in the circus, when Alexis Hale would have rather had, you know, perhaps an idiot who he can con. Like, Ronaldo fights his corner to get paid appropriately, and to even get the job. And so I think there's a bit of begrudging. You're too clever for me. I don't like you because of that. There's a difference as well, because Alexis Hale's character doesn't want to harm them, really. He doesn't like them. He'd like to fire them and keep their money. But what happens, essentially, is Phil Daniels, bumps off Ronaldo, essentially.
Takes it into his own hands. He didn't get sent to do that.
No.
He just did it himself.
Actually, the whole act they come up with is quite weird, because one of the interesting parts of the story is how their act develops. Because essentially, Ronaldo is doing this acrobatics act where he fakes falling into the audience. And then Victor, who doesn't realise it's, like, fake, is concerned for his friend, isn't he? And he runs into one of the in on one of these, you know, acts, and it's hilarious. For the crowd, have not seen anything as funny. A big man and a little man, one of them's on a string. What could be more hilarious? A concerned large man and a tiny scared man. The best act you've ever seen. And then they develop it into a gimmick then, isn't it? Where they dress Clancy Proud up as a woman and have him play the mother of the tiny man. Who is going to fall, and it's like all about the trying to catch him and concern, and you know, because drag sells, that's the big thing, isn't it?
That's the thing. There, it's always complicated for an actor when you're playing a character who's playing a character that is a different gender to your character.
Yeah, you're playing a reanimated, actually, this is the thing, we've got to a story where a giant man who was dead has been brought to life, and is then, when we establish he's an idiot, he is made to dress as a woman and perform in the circus and catch a tiny man. Like, it's quite the life to have after death, isn't it?
But, I suppose
it's just, it's a weird situation to be in, but it's a good, you know, you get it, given the context of the time period, it's a good act, it makes money. Alexei Sale and Phil Daniels are not happy because they're kind of jealous and they're full of hate. And essentially, there's the sabotage leads to Ronaldo actually falling to his death. And is you know, comforted by Victor, who's there to pick him up off the floor. And essentially, there's a nice touching moment where Ronaldo dies, but not before, you know, saying how much of a friend, you know, they were to each other.
Yeah. This is one of the, I think one of the times where I've been watching a film and I really didn't want someone to die.
Yeah.
Was here. It's like, you're the truly the saving grace of this film so far. You can't go away right now. It was like, I'm not specifically for the actual scene where it happened. I mean, it did get a little bit cheesy.
Yeah. You must have this token of Venice that I was dreaming of, and always have a dream and all that stuff, yeah.
I mean, it was a very cliched death, but it's just like, you're the only life in this film, please don't go away.
And also, you know, we all like Victor because he's a good-hearted, moronic giant, but we still like him. Don't leave him, he'll be useless. And, you know, and there's always this with the Frankenstein's monster story. It's a lot like Hulk, where, you know, he may seem like a destructive monster, but if you understand him, his heart's in the right place. He doesn't want to hurt. He's just, you know, led by emotion, isn't it? That's that. You know, there's always a tension that this guy could be dangerous, and that's always an issue in all of the stories. But it's when Ronaldo dies that we know things are going to get worse. And essentially what it leads to is Victor discovering Phil Daniels rummaging, like trying to steal the money that belongs to them, and he another animal, we got a lion in a cage, and it's really epic but terrifying death, where he basically, Abby, you're a wrestling fan, what kind of move would you say he uses to dispense of Phil Daniels on the spikes of the lion's cage?
It's just an overhead throw, really.
Kind of overhead splash. No, it's kind of a scoop slam with a bit of extra velocity, isn't it?
And Phil, whose idea was it for Phil Daniels to pull that face?
Oh, he just gurned it up a bit, isn't he?
It's a proper Mortal Kombat style fatality. He's right, oh my goodness, he's been entirely spiked and speared on a lion's cage. Good grief.
It's because they cut back to his face twice.
Yeah.
It's like, you think this is hilarious. He didn't.
Yeah, I think he tips over the caravan that Alexei sails in because he didn't. We overhear that he didn't want him to kill Ronaldo, and so he doesn't have to die. And he continues to be a thorn in the side of Victor because I think he recognises him when Victor's trying to escape, essentially, doesn't he? And he causes one of those classic Frankenstein things where everyone has a lit, like, they have pitchforks and lit torches and are chasing someone. That's got to happen in all Dr. Frankenstein-type stories, hasn't it?
And in a nice subversion, he gets given up by a blind man.
Oh, that's true.
Like that as a touch.
Yeah, because for a little bit, Victor is just off. He runs away from the circus, essentially, because, you know, killed a guy. He gets away for a while, but essentially we have to keep cutting back to the epic lols back at Dr. Frankenstein's manor.
The geography of this world seems a bit off.
At times it seems they travel far, and then other times it seems it's not so far, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then it kind of looks like he's supposed to be going in the other direction, but turns out going back on himself, back to the kind of Frankenstein manor.
Convenient for the ending, of course.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Although I suppose you could say he was going back to his love.
Yeah, this is a weird thing. We have both of them living separately. Both corpses are living again, but separately. And there's this kind of weird, we feel each other's emotions from time to time.
Yeah, that was an odd thing that they didn't really go into. It's just
twin magic.
Oh, they're mentally linked a bit, but it's not really relevant.
I think in another version of the story I've seen, so I don't know if it's actually in the book at all, but they actually have like two halves of the same brain.
Hmm.
Oh, well, which... Adam and Eve, you know, they shared a rib, didn't they?
So that might be what they allude to, but they certainly don't put it out loud.
They just have that thing that twins are alleged to have, which is that mental connection where you sense the other one's pain and things. I mean, they establish this while the bride is learning things. She spins for ages and says one of my favourite lines, which is, "Oh, the world is big," like, or something. I think that's what she says. "Oh, the world is big." And she spins round, and that makes Victor dizzy wherever he is, causing them problems. They establish that they have a sense, like a sort of sixth sense for what the other one's, when the other one's suffering, isn't it? Like, she has nightmares when he's being traumatised, and vice versa, isn't it?
Yes.
So there's maybe a homing pigeon thing going on as well. So Victor's running away, but also being brought back to her because of their mental link, because they're the only two, you know, living cadavers going on about their business.
Yeah, and they have like a moment in the forest, don't they? Where they reconnect.
They meet each other, don't they? Yeah.
And the stories start to converge again then after that.
Yeah. One of the scenes that happened a little bit earlier with the bride's side of things was one I got to bring up because it's probably mine and Abby's favourite bit. But she's being presented. I haven't mentioned this, have I?
No.
She's being presented to the hoity-toity higher-ups in Frankenstein's life. All these rich and privileged people. And she's presented to them. And, she, you know, occasionally she's got to give the game away that there's something different about her. And, it, you know, Dr. Frankenstein's like, "No, I've trained her. She'll be good." But one of the incidents that goes awry and makes everyone a bit confused and suspicious of her is when a small cat comes, and Abby, would you like to take over the telling of the tale?
She hisses at it and makes it run away. And later on, when he asks her about it, she says, "You didn't tell me about cats. I thought it was a tiny lion."
Genius. Of course, because when you sit someone down and teach them about the world, of course you tell them about lions. First thing you're going to mention is lions, but you're going to leave cats off that list.
The animal you're probably most likely to come across.
And in fact, is in the same house as you. That doesn't come up. Lions, we'll mention them. You've got to know about lions and how scary and dangerous they are. That's why they're going to be caged. Yeah, so
It was a good moment, though, when she kind of hisses and, like, everyone doesn't really know how to react, but then just kind of forgets about it because it's polite society.
Yeah. It also introduces a guy who is in The Princess Bride, whose name I've forgotten.
Cariel West.
Yes.
Yes. He is playing a dashing young gentleman who probably just fancies this attractive young woman from Vampire's Kiss. And maybe he's seen that film. And he takes a fancy to her in the normal way and is occasionally flirting and trying to meet her, you know, and trying to advance a relationship and get a bit fresh by the end, doesn't he? So that's when he's kind of introduced to this character, you know, to this character, and then and just to also create some jealousy for Frankenstein, because he doesn't want some young whippersnapper coming in and stealing his lady.
No, not at all. What do you guys think of? I have a theory that this film would have been greatly improved if Sting and Carrie Elway swapped roles.
Oh, much better would that would have been.
I know, wouldn't that have been perfect? So Sting is kind of relegated to just the kind of handsome, kind of long blonde-haired soldier guy who's a bit of a git. And then actually Carrie Elway is given the character with big emotions and things that he has to do.
Oh, that's tragic. I wish you hadn't said that.
Also, you know, Frankenstein really should be an older man. I mean, Kerry could perhaps have played him if he'd have been a bit older, I think. I think he wasn't quite the right age for that role. But Sting wasn't really either. Part of the problem between it not working is she should be, you know, attracted to a young man because she's young-ish. And Frankenstein should be, you know, a mad old scientist to some degree. And therefore not appropriate for her. And, you know, also her creator. It's a weird relationship to try and start, isn't it? But yeah, it would, perhaps that would have been a way to solve it. It certainly would have cut down on Sting, which is something we've come to the conclusion of. So yeah, I wanted to bring up that scene. But essentially, we get to the point where the bride and Frankenstein's monster meet. Victor meets Eva, and they seem to get on, but it's just a sort of, hello, yeah, that's fine. And obviously, by this point, Victor, because he's so basic, is just, I know I must try and like this woman. And I think he probably remembers her as well, whereas she, for some reason, doesn't recognise him. She had only just come back to life, in fairness.
She did have the kind of, they shook hands, or he touched her hand, and she had a kind of vague memory, but that was about it.
Yeah. We also get a great scene off the back of this, where Victor's wandering about again and comes across I think it's like a gypsy salesman. Yeah, in his caravan of wares. And this merchant, anyway, has a stall of kind of, you know, cheap, rubbishy garments and jewellery and stuff. And it's a really good scene because you don't know how it's going to go. It leads you to think this guy's a massive jerk con man, and has seen Victor come in a mile off and he's going to con him because he's essentially trying to sell almost anything. And Victor's like, oh, pretty, sparkly things. And then this guy's, oh, yeah, jewellery, mate, is it? Love a bit of jewellery. Lovely one for the lady, is it? Yeah. You know, like, and he shows him this tray of jewels that are all sort of cheap plastic cut glass or whatever. And Victor's taken by the most gaudy, huge necklace ever. And is willing to give all of his money up. And this guy, it looks like at first he's going to take his money and con him. And then just as you think, they even do that thing of, he looks like he's going to give back at least one of Victor's coins after saying it's worth all of them. But then he actually just keeps the one coin and gives them. And I just think that was a really good way to mess with us as an audience. Did you guys appreciate that scene?
There's a lot going on behind that guy's eyes as well. He gave the suggestion of, I know that if I do this, something really bad is going to happen to me. I need to give this back.
Maybe he's thinking about karma or some other, maybe gypsy luck would be like, oh, this guy's fallen in my lap, I could take advantage, it would be so easy, but on the other hand, I suppose
some people from the past had to be a little bit nice.
That's the thing, we've had the circus full of jerks, and they kind of bullied Victor and like mocked the fact that he wanted to ride a horse and things and treated him badly, fact, so someone should be nice.
I'm just pretty sure no one, other than the kind of Ronaldo and Victor and maybe the bride, have been nice at all during this. So this is like the only other person who's been a little bit nice. Maybe they just had to throw that in somewhere.
To address the balance here. But anyway, he's already given probably his most prized possession, the token that Ronaldo gave him. So more like in just a beautiful moment of friendship, and Victor gives it away to just a woman he fancies, and then he buys a kind of worthless piece of jewellery to give to her as well. But essentially, we don't get to have another chance meeting. We are driven by the plot, and essentially Frankenstein has gone from jealous, controlling creator to just completely mental. I can't have you. I created you. I should be allowed to smooch you. And he forces herself on her. He's a complete 180 heel turn.
He's gone from having no water in the pot at all to boiling over completely.
It's true. Sting is very bland all the way through. And then suddenly he almost shouts. He shouts, but in a really I can't act way. Like, is this anger being loud? Is loud angry? No, it's a bit more than that. I guess it'll do.
Yeah, especially towards this end bit. Like, there's scenes where he's trying to be threatening, but he's just really not. And it comes off kind of a little bit pathetic at times.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's kind of like, he's grabbed the arm of one of his maids or something, because she knows some information about the disappearance of the bride. And he's just like, if you don't tell me anything, I'm going to break your arm. And I don't know, it's just nothing in that scene was threatening in the slightest.
Yeah, if you're going to go for a pop star from that era to act, maybe get David Bowie. I just think he's got more acting chops. Much more threatening as Gerard the Goblin King. I know, he's done some good stuff. He was quite interesting in Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. I know that's a film you quite like, Abby.
Let's not talk about that. I have very confused feelings over Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Fair enough. David Bowie, though, is another one of those people who go, oh, he's got into acting, have you? But Sting is very much, no, don't cast Sting again. Thank you. Anyway, Sting bashing aside, the scene plays out where Dr. Frankenstein is essentially attacking and potentially raping the bride after breaking it to her that she was actually was brought back to life by him. So she's having a tough old time, but luckily Victor's there to bish and bash his way into the place. And much to the surprise of Frankenstein, Sting didn't really pull off surprised either. He was more like, oh, you.
Oh, you're here again, are you? Let's get some fire. You don't like that. Bye.
Yeah. Exactly. So they have, there's quite a dramatic part where they're running up the broken tower that exploded in the accident at the start. So I thought it was quite well directed to a point. And then, you know, essentially all that happens is Dr. Frankenstein and Victor fight, and Victor sort of sidesteps him and he falls off the tower.
Yeah. And it's less a fight, it's more kind of like Victor is coming at... No, Frankenstein is coming at Victor, and Victor just kind of dodges, and that's it. That's the whole fight scene.
Yeah. He misses with the old flaming 2x4, which feels like it should have been brandished by Mick Foley or maybe Hacks or Jim Duggan. and just falls to his death. And yeah. We have a pretty quick wrap-up where essentially Eva's pleased to have been rescued and found her soulmate again. And cut to montages of... Well, a very cheap montage of their faces over some stock footage of Venice, I seem to recall.
That's something else the director confessed, is that I can't remember if he ran out of money or time or both, but he had to rush an ending and he was not happy with what he ended up with.
Yeah. One of the things that made me come round to this film was hearing the commentary on the DVD. And the director, you just go... Oh, you had all the good intentions, and you obviously had a lot of time and effort for this, but just that certain thing went wrong, and it didn't turn out into the film you'd hoped for. And I just had all the more sympathy, and I thought, you know what, I like this film more, because the director's been honest in his commentary and talking about it in retrospect, and you have a bit more appreciation for that it wasn't just a rubbish film on purpose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Nobody sets out to make a film that is terrible.
Well, why those would people they? Who make epic movie, they must set out to make a bad film on purpose. I think we can look at Asylum and go, any movie made by Asylum, they've made them bad on purpose.
But I mean, generally nobody speaking, makes a movie to fail, is what I mean.
Yeah.
They always try and make something that can be shown and will be liked. And it's just bad luck and or circumstances if they don't.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's got elements of melodrama that kind of work. It's got tragedies and happy moments, and, you know, there's moments where I found myself actually buying into some of the characters, particularly between Victor and Ronaldo. I enjoyed and was sucked into it at times, as I was, I think, when we put it on the first time. And I have a lot of time for this film, despite it being quite a poor movie overall, mainly due to the man they call Sting, not the rest of the Sting. The artist known as... Why is he even called Sting? Just get a proper name. Come on.
I think I've made my feelings abundantly clear on Sting in this, so I won't say any more.
Apparently the other members of Police did not get on with him.
Okay.
To say it.
Well, awesome. if he was going about stage acting, then I can see why. But
I think I'm going to cut Sting a tiny bit more slack than you are. Because if you're an inexperienced actor and your director isn't directing his actors enough, then it's sort of... He should have had a bit more help. I don't know how far he would have got if he had had help.
I was going to say, maybe I'm coming off a bit harsh. It's like, I know it's not... It's Sting's fault, you know. He's never done a leading role before. And like you say, the director probably... I mean, I don't think many of the actors seem that directed in this. And he's just the kind of one major element that really kind of... Because there's so much of him in the film, it's to its detriment, really.
Well, someone managed to turn Justin Timberlake into an occasionally convincing actor. I wouldn't vouch for everything the guy's done, but, you know, pop stars into actors can happen. But in Sting's case, better off maybe checking out Lock, Stock or something.
I mean, he's got the look. Smaller. He's got the look. He's certainly, you know, got the look, but he wasn't right for this at all.
No. I think split the film in two, make your story between Victor and Ronaldo. If you want, make the story of, you know, Frankenstein tries a lady this time. Like, Frankenstein tries a lady tonight. That's what I'd call that one. And maybe the moron and his mate for the other one. Yeah, so final thoughts and ratings. What can we rate this as? What can we say in summation?
Tough one for rating.
I think we're all generally agreed that it's a flawed film, and we all... think the Victor/Ronaldo side is far superior to the Sting/Bride side.
Right?
Yeah, I tell you what, this is how I'm going to rate it. I think it is like the first attempt at an experiment. You've created your, you know, you've got a plan. You want to reanimate a person. You want to bring someone to life. You want to put together your own human and give them life. You succeed to an extent, but like Frankenstein is not. He's not pleased with the first result. It isn't quite what you wanted. It's turned out to be a big moronic monster, played rather well by Clancy Brown, but nevertheless, it is not a full-blown success. You can't market it to more people. You can't be, you know, heralded as a genius god. You have to go back to the drawing board. I think this film was... Well done, you made a film, but there's still problems... It's still a bit of a horror story, isn't it, really? So I'm saying it's like a Frankenstein monster in itself.
I'm going to say it's like this sandwich I had recently. Where it was... Right, it's three flatbreads. So there's one on the top, there's one in the middle, and there's one on the bottom. For some reason, they put all the chicken between the top flatbread and the middle flatbread. Then all the salad between the middle flatbread and the bottom flatbread. So when I picked it up, I only picked up the bit that had chicken in, because I thought they were two separate sandwiches. And then when I noticed the bottom one only had salad in, I was like, what's going on? So I put it back together, and I just kept thinking to myself, this isn't how sandwiches work. This isn't correct. There's all of the good bit in the top, and all of the bit that nobody buys a sandwich for in the bottom.
You could have made two decent sandwiches. But instead, I've got one atrocity. I can vote for Abby's sandwich.
Still edible.
Yeah, it was edible. You did eat it.
I did, but it felt incorrect the whole time.
Yeah, add another flatbread and turn it into two, or lose the salad-y flatbread that doesn't have a lid entirely. Yeah. Sorry, another very apt metaphor, Abby, I think.
Thank you. Anthony?
I don't really have anything except for something like, if you get a pizza with someone else who doesn't like the same things as you do, so you get like a half and half pizza.
Hmm.
And it arrives, and you look at their side of the pizza, and all of a sudden that looks a lot tastier and nicer, and that's the side that you want, but you can't because you've bought into your side and you have to eat it. Yet you kind of try and steal a cheeky slice of the other person's.
Yeah, and maybe even they like, you know, maybe they've committed the sin of having like pineapple on it, and you can't really enjoy it because you don't like pineapple, and it's slightly tainted your side a bit as well. And it's a shame, but we, you know, there's potential to have a nice pizza, but it's ruined by the shared experience of two different halves.
Somewhat,
yeah.
Plus, there's also the kind of expectation of, like, well, this bit is not what I wanted, and yet here it is, and it looks wonderful and better than thing, and yet I'm stuck with my side kind of thing.
So you're saying, like, the side with Clancy Brown in and his story isn't what you thought would be interesting, but you found you wanted more of it, and the bit you've got is the sting-filled, pineapple-y bit that you inadvisedly agreed to have.
Yes, and yet you have to eat it.
Yeah, I think very much a half and half concept is emerging in our metaphors. But, yeah, I think, you know, we've said what we've said. I'm hesitant to bash Sting any further. And I think The Bride is at least an interesting addition to the myth of Frankenstein. There's so many, you know, redos and versions of it. So I think it's... It's not the worst, but it certainly isn't the pinnacle. And,
yeah, definitely. I can't, as is, I don't recall any other kind of Frankenstein thing where Frankenstein, like the monster and the bride actually get together at the end.
I really wish you could remake half a movie.
You can, Abby. You can. But
people just don't.
Anyway, I think that does it for our podcast, right, guys?
It seems so.
Time to reanimate an old one, perhaps. Bring back some life to ones that have subsequently died or something. There's a few podcast corpses we could bring back to life. And, you know, the future will determine if we succeed or not. So on my slightly cryptic goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.